Hey, this is Alex Lindsay sitting in for Leo, who is in Norway. We're here with Andy Anatko, who's in an airport with his iPad. We've got Don McAllister and Sarah Lane. We're going to be talking about all kinds of Apple rumors and Apple business and a little time traveling with Leo. So definitely check it out. Coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 296, recorded on April 24th, 2012. The Time Traveler.
Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Meet face-to-face from anywhere in the world with GoToMeeting with HD Faces. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and use the offer code MACBREAK. And by Gazelle, the easy way to sell your iPhone, iPad, iPod, or Android smartphones from your home or office so you can get the latest versions. Get a risk-free quote that's good for 30 days at Gazelle.com. And by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your computer files, just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com. And don't forget to use the offer code MACBREAK to get 2 bonus months with purchase.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Mac Break Weekly. This is Alex Lindsay sitting in for Leo, who is in Norway? Is it Finland? Is it Norway?
It's Norwegian.
I'm here with Sarah
Lane. I don't know where. Hi.
Hey, well, at least Sarah's here.
I am. Yes.
Exactly.
So. Yeah, Leo's gone this week, and you were maybe going to be gone, and so I thought, gosh, am I going to have to host Mac Break Weekly? The pressure. And then Alex pulled through at the last minute, and I went, cool, I can just be a helper.
Saying. Yeah, exactly. Helper. And we also here, of course, with Andy Anatko. Where are you, Andy?
I am in an undisclosed location on my way to the land of ire.
Oh my goodness!
I've heard of Ireland like all my life, but only in preparing to travel there like only a few days ago, did I realize, wait a minute, that means the land of ire. They're not going to put up with a lot from me.
Well, it looks very secretive where you are. It's covered up. Anyway, so we'll
it's sort of starry and sunny at the same time.
Yes,
exactly. So
I see a plug, an electrical plug. He's somewhere in a civilized area.
Oh. Also coming from his neck of the woods, Don McAllister. Hey, Don.
Hello there. Hello. I think it's Superman's ice cave until I saw that plug, and then that probably blew it, really. But it looks very sparkly where he is anyway. But hello. Thank you for inviting me back on.
It's great to have you, of course. And we've got a lot of news, of course. It's Apple. And we have earnings calls, which, of course, Apple has chosen to do right after the show because that's what they do. You know, they don't want us to talk about the... It'd be really fun to do a live broadcast of the earnings calls. Oh, wait.
Although analysts are all over it. Analysts love to try to guess what the earnings numbers will be before we actually hear.
Do you have a guess?
The official earnings numbers. A Piper Jaffray analyst, Gene Munster, does.
What did he say?
He's projecting Apple to deliver 30 million to 33 million iPhone units in the March quarter. Those estimates are based at least partly on Verizon's tally of 3.2 million iPhone activations. Munster also says 33 million iPhone units due to growth in China and other countries.
So, Andy, does this matter at all? The question is, does it matter to Apple? I mean, obviously the revenue matters to Apple, but all these analysts talking about it and which direction their stock goes, it kind of feels like they have to obviously deal with this, but what kind of concern is it for them?
I really think they're at that level right now where so long as they can prove that the market for iOS devices is consistent and expanding, where it's not the case where consumers are just looking for that one phone, that one holiday purchase, as long as they can say the quarter after quarter after quarter there is a consistent demand for every form of iOS device that we sell, that's the only form of win that Apple's really, really focused on for the analyst call. More money is always better than less money. But really, what they really want to be able to say is that we don't just have one hot phone that's replaced by another hot phone next quarter. They want to say that there's consistent, reliable demand for our strategy.
Don, do you think, I mean, obviously, I mean, from a U.S. perspective, I think one of the things that if the stock started going down a lot, we would probably see more pressure for Apple to do dividends and so on and so forth. Do you think that, but Apple tends to look very much at a long-term trajectory. Do you think that they spend a lot of time worrying about these?
I don't think so. And again, I mean, I really sort of get a bit annoyed with the professional analysts because they're so far off the money sometimes. You know, they really seem to be just making it up. I think the independent analysts, the people who really focus in on the Apple and the Apple ecosystem and understand Apple, I think they normally have better results than the professional analysts, to be honest. And again, I don't think Apple... it must be frustrating for them because, you know, they do lead people down the wrong track sometimes with their forecasts, etc. But I don't think Apple are really that concerned. I don't think really it's about the stock price, although they need to protect the stock price as best they can. But in some respects, it's pretty much out of their hands.
Yeah, I mean, and we'll see how it turns out. I think that, to me, the only thing would be more pressure for dividends. As the stocks keep on going up, people like me just keep on saying, well, just enjoy the ride because it doesn't, you know, you're getting your return. You're getting return every quarter because the stock keeps on going up.
Right? I think one of the interesting numbers will be Mac sales. Obviously, iPad sales are going to be strong. iPhone sales, I don't think that's going to be a surprise to anybody if they beat expectations. And Apple always historically has conservative expectations on their side. But as far as Mac sales go, another analyst, Sha Wu, he works at Stern Edge, says he's projecting 4.3 million Mac units, which is down from 4.7 million in the previous quarter. Some of that comes from an NPD report that Mac units fell 16% just last month.
Right. Well,
so, but if iPad sales keep going up and Mac sales keep, you know, it's not.
Well,
I don't think Apple cares so much.
I think as a host on Mac Break, my only concern is not having my Mac, which I'm really attached to.
Right.
I'm
your 17 inch.
My 17
inch.
In
fact.
It.
You better hold on to that thing, because I don't know if you can. You can upgrade it. I have one too.
I have five or six of them.
So. Do you?
Well, the company has five or six of them. We use them. You know, they still have some uses. They're much faster. I actually don't need the form size. I just need the screen resolution and the power. But
well,
I would
editing,
love for it to be smaller.
This is the way to go. I mean, that's why I had my 17-inch MacBook Pro belongs to Twit, but I convinced them to let me buy it because I said it'll be a portable editing rig. At the time, I had a little bit more time to do editing. I don't so much these days, but it really made a big difference. But it's not really all that portable, especially when you've got something like the Air.
It is. It's just a good workout.
Yeah.
I often...
Interestingly, the 17-inch is more like a portable desktop. You know, you take it somewhere, but then you actually leave it in your hotel room and go back to it, and you use your iPad or your MacBook Air as your portable device. So it's sort of like a desktop you can lift up and take away somewhere and plunk it down and then use it as a desktop machine, in effect.
And just in case you're wondering, you can fit two of those desktops in your backpack.
You've got strong wrists. That's hard to do. You just held that whole thing up with one wrist.
Well, I have to carry those all the time.
Right, so you're used to it.
It's a long, long drawn-out thing.
Also, Alex has an underwear area that's very, very resistant to heat. Don't get that, too. But the other thing that we're going to be really looking forward to in the analyst call is that this is one of the rare occasions when the senior executives get to respond interactively with any damn question that anybody wants to ask. So the things that I'm really curious about are not about the 17-inch MacBooks, but to see what kind of answers they have when analysts ask them about things like the Kindle Fire and things like 7-inch tablets off of Android. Tim Cook's comments during the last call were very telling because this was the first analyst call after the holiday season, and people were asking directly, do you think that did the sales of the Kindle Fire, a really, really highly successful Amazon product, did that affect sales of the iPad? And they were saying, no, we feel as though iPad sales are dinging MacBook sales a little bit, but we don't feel as though we've felt any pressure from the Kindle Fire, at least not this quarter. So this is the opportunity to hear a lot of those tidbits where people have to think on their feet and they have to answer truthfully because this is a legal requirement that they're putting up with right now.
Now, what do you think as we go into this, do you think that the Kindle Fire is making a large impact on the iPad, or does it remain kind of in its own position, in its own market?
I think it's in its own market. Not only, and you have to really group it not only with the Kindle Fire, but also the Touch Kindle. It really is a big deal to have a $100 book reader out there that pretty much is within reach of just about everybody. That's not something that Apple can furnish right now. But I really think they're looking at that very, very carefully, and they're choosing their timing very carefully about what the, I believe that they do have a plan for a way to sell a $299 or even a $250 iPad, but they don't want to drop the hammer on that until they feel as though consumers have said very strongly, hey, look, we really, really, really want to have a smaller or less expensive iPad.
Now, one of the things that we've seen, we have some other reports that are just as interesting to some degree, as we switch away from the analyst calls, is the iPhone accounted for half of the smartphone sales for Verizon. And is this true? 78% of the smartphone activations for AT&T. That has got to be both compelling for both of those companies and fairly frightening. Wouldn't you think? I mean, because you walk into the AT&T store and you see, there's 30 or 40 different options, or at least it feels like there's 30 or 40 different options. And what were you saying, Andy?
Sorry, I was going to say that's a good point, because a senior Verizon executive just last week made a really big, bold point in his own, like, I believe it was an analyst call he was participating in himself, saying that they're investing very, very heavily, or at least really heavily promoting Windows Phone. And the subtext there was that we don't want to have our entire business to be controlled just by the iPhone. We want to make sure that we've got as many pennies and as many fountains as possible.
Don, do you think that this do you think it's the same that we see in I mean, do you feel that in
yeah,
London
we,
as well?
We don't actually get figures. We don't get exposed to the figures of the number of activations, et cetera. In fact, we don't really get a feel here in the UK for, just how one vendor is doing against another. It's fairly ubiquitous now. iPhone's pretty much everywhere. But I still think it boils down to the fact that, people go looking for an iPhone or they go looking for another phone. And, it's the other phone can be any of, say, 30 or 40 different types of Android phones. I'm not sure how the Windows phone is going to play into this, whether or not it will sort of get the traction that people think it might. But, it's still an iPhone versus the rest of the world. And while people are still conscious of the iPhone, while they're still progressing the brand and they're still building new features into it. And don't forget, I think it was, I read somewhere last month that the iPhone 3GS, it's a 3 or 4 year old phone, and people are still buying it. It's still one of the top phones for sale.
Well, it's free.
And it's still relevant. It's still working. It's still upgradable. When new versions of iOS comes out, people can install it on the iPhone 3GS, and they've got a brand new, up to the minute phone with most of the features that the better models have than the hardware.
Here's the question: do we really think that the new Windows phone is really going to do well? I mean, we hear a lot about it. Everyone seems to be very excited about it.
Lumia 900 is sold out in places.
Okay, all right.
So okay, I think there's a lot of interest. I haven't had a chance to play around with one, for very long, rather than holding it here or there a couple of times, but. The reviewers seem to love it, but the thing is it's like it's not an iPhone competitor in my opinion. Right. It has a lower price point. Mm-hmm. The materials are different. Obviously, the operating system is extremely different. It's very unique. I think it's going to appeal to a lot of people, but I don't see a lot of folks jumping ship from iOS to Windows Phone.
I don't get the interface. I look at it and I'm like, but I don't really understand this. Andy, have you played with one much?
Oh, I've had one for weeks. I'm a huge, huge fan of the Windows Phone operating system. I've had the Lumia 800 and the 900. And one of the reasons why I love it so much is that it's the only mobile phone operating system, the only smartphone operating system that doesn't try to ape the iPhone in any way. Microsoft really did go there in their own direction. And so the idea is not to try to knock iPhone off of its perch, and you really can't do that. The idea is to appeal to people that are kind of, I guess an iPhone's nice, I guess, but I wish it weren't so complicated, or I wish I didn't have to keep drilling down into apps in order to get at what I want. I wish that what I really was interested in was Surface, like the minute that I take this phone out of my pocket. So for that reason, I think they've really, really staked out a really interesting bit of turf for themselves. The other thing about it is that it's going to make a whole lot more sense to a whole lot more people once Windows 8 comes out. When you see that level of interaction, when it has a tight level of interaction with Windows that works as tightly as the iPhone works with Mac OS, then we're going to see a lot of people who they got their free upgrade to Windows 8 they upgraded their machines to Windows 8, or they bought a new machine that has Windows 8. They go into the store because their contract on their old Android phone is up. They say, wait a minute, this looks exactly like what I've got going on Windows 8 on my desktop. How well does this phone work with my desktop operating system? And if this Windows phone will work much, much better with their notebook than an iPhone will work with their Windows notebook, that is kind of like the thin end of the wedge that Microsoft can really exploit. But the bottom line is that they don't have to beat the iPhone. All they have to do is create a market that Microsoft doesn't have right now, which is a market for handsets.
Well, and I have to admit, the iPhone does not the iPhone and iPod, I mean, they do work with PCs, and they don't work very well. I mean, you know, my parents...
They don't want you to think that they work really well.
To run your iPhone with a Windows machine, if you must, until you can afford to buy a Macintosh.
Well, the Halo, I think that's part of the Halo. If you buy an iPhone, and then it doesn't really... It's not really smooth, and then it finally you just break down and buy a Mac so that your iPhone will work better.
You have to give it to Microsoft for building something that... It does not look like iOS, and it doesn't look like Android either. I mean, I consider Android and iOS. I know that they're two completely different, the philosophies and ways of doing thing. But in general, I feel like the phones all look the same.
Right.
In general.
Yeah.
You know.
The interesting thing.
The Windows phone, not so much.
Yeah, it's interesting timing as well for when, you know, it's going to take Microsoft a couple of months to actually get Windows Phone out there and the marketing kick in, et cetera, and then Windows 8 comes out. But of course, over the next couple of months, I mean, we're looking at hopefully June-ish for WWDC, and one would expect and one would anticipate at WWDC that, you know, the new features of iOS 6 will be announced. And I don't know whether or not we'll see a new phone at that event, probably in the autumn or the fall. But, you know, then the game's changed again because, you know, Apple have had a year to work on the new version of iOS. There'll be new hardware coming out for the iPhone. We've got Mountain Lion coming out, and we don't know yet what integration there will be between the Mac, the new Macs that come out this year as well, with the new processors and Mountain Lion and iOS 6. So again, you know, it's this sort of snowballing effect, this leapfrogging effect that Apple always work to their best advantage, really, of sort of keeping ahead of the curve and bringing this new technology out. Just as other people are coming on stream with technology they've been working on, Apple has this tendency to leapfrog them, and that will be interesting to see what they're up against.
Now, the Worldwide Developers Conference has not been announced, right?
We're still waiting on it. Yeah, there is a rumored date, which is in the middle of June, and
we always know what the dates are because they have to set up. Yeah. You know, so if you go to the Moscone,
you have to reserve the space.
You go to the Moscone space, and it says Apple has reserved this window.
Yeah,
so it's,
you go. Well,
it's a corporate event, it says, but it gives you the clues. But it's normally the Apple event, and we're still waiting to hear for the announcement, really. And of course, all the developers are on tenterhooks because it sold out within about 8 hours last year.
Yeah, it's incredible that, you know, and it's expensive. This isn't like a cheap little conference, right? This is like $1,500 or something like that to go. And Apple, and you wonder, I always wonder if Apple could just make it a little bit bigger. But I guess that they, you know, if it sells out that fast, you could double it and sell it out in 18.
Yeah, one of the issues, though, is access to the Apple staff, because they have about 1,000 engineers on site. And for the main benefit for most of the developers who go, obviously there's lots of networking and meeting other developers, et cetera, and the sessions themselves. Although they're very quick in getting the sessions out now. I think they had the sessions out in about 2 or 3 weeks last year. So the sessions aren't really the critical point. For a lot of people, it's the one-to-one with the Apple engineers. You can book workshops and sort of interviews with Apple engineers to focus in on specific elements of your own particular application.
And you don't hear much about it because we're not allowed to talk about it when it's actually going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all...
Yeah, other than the main event, other than the main keynote, that's right.
Yeah, so the we'll see. In development of the iPhone, there's a, you know, we got a Chinese website. You know, where would we be without Chinese websites? I mean, without their products, it would be very dark. There wouldn't be a lot of technology. But without technology websites, we wouldn't know what was coming next and or have some idea or at least be able to talk about it on the show. And so we have a square button. This is the new... How does Apple do this? They get us to talk about the square button. Andy, do you think that the button is going to become... the home button is going to become square?
Oh, well, it's interesting. I mean, they could have just built this just for some ideas of kicking around. It could... you don't see the back of the button, so maybe there's even some new touch sensitivity on the back of it. But I've started to redefine China as Narnia, because it's this magical land where centaurs fight with golden daggers and mystical parts happen, come from out of nowhere, that may or may not have anything to do with anything that we're going to see in the next 3 years. I don't feel as though we can really talk about the idea of squaring off the button is a really, really big deal.
You know, when I first read this article, I had to actually pull out my phone and look at it because I thought, wait, it isn't already a square? But the thing is, when you think about it, okay, let me unlock my phone. When you think about it, you've got a perfectly round button, kind of hard to see because I've got the white iPhone, but inside the button, you've got the little square. It's sort of just a gray outline, but it makes perfect sense to make the button the same size and shape as the apps themselves. That's exactly what that would mean.
It does make sense.
And that just makes sense.
Yeah. I don't think
this is very far-fetched at all.
In fact, now that I've seen this picture, I'm actually fairly angry with Apple.
And why?
I think that the industrial design has failed us. It should have been square from the beginning.
When it
went to the four, when they moved to the kind of squarish look, that's when they should have made the change.
Yeah, I mean, it's
what were they thinking?
Well, maybe they figured that the home button, you know, there's only so much outrage people can take when you change anything at all. So
yeah, there's some. It doesn't fit in with the current speculation about what Apple might do with the size of the screen, though, does it? Because I know rumors are rampant that to get a bigger screen on the iPhone, they don't need to change the physical body size. They just need to elongate the screen, and that would probably necessitate an oblong button, an oblong home button, or a rectangular home button rather than a square or a round one. So it doesn't quite fit in with those particular rumors.
Yeah, I got to say, responding to a rumor several months before the fact, I acknowledge all of that. But I would be really disappointed in Apple if they totally changed the aspect ratio of the screen, created a whole new what you would think would have to be a whole new class category of iPhone apps just because they don't want to make the handset wider. Given that there are just millions and millions and millions of these slightly larger phones that everybody seems to use and everybody seems to love, that would be Apple would really have to convince me that they're not just being contrary in adding this extra row of vertical pixels instead of just simply making the iPhone a little bit wider.
Yeah, I think it is due for a form factor change. Probably a bit more significant, just the screen size. Although it wouldn't surprise me if we did just see the screen elongate, because it is a fairly elegant solution to what could be quite a thorny problem for them, other than to completely redesign, you know, the iPhone 5 or whatever it's going to be, the new iPhone, to have a completely different form factor. But, you know, we've had the 4 with 4S, so now the next one might actually be ripe for a brand new
phone. It better look different. I mean, I don't want a whole different phone that's, you know, that's built from the ground up necessarily.
I think they should make it triangular.
That'll
show off your
it would
your,
be the sturdiest. Exactly, that's for sure.
Exactly. You'd put a whole bunch of them together and build a bridge.
If you get frustrated, you could throw it away. It would boomerang all the way back to you with that shape.
Right. There's the rumors of using liquid metal on the back of it rather than glass, which would make it...
I do believe the back might be due for a change, because I think the reason why they went with glass for the back was simply because they were just sick and tired of seeing all those scratches on the plastic back of the device. I think that's the sole reason why they went with glass for the back of it. I think it's been 2 years since we've seen that glass back design. I think we got a lot of data where that's kind of a fault point. That if you drop it, that's probably going to go. I do think that the iPhone 4 is a little bit more fragile than complementary Android phones that I've tried. So I wouldn't be surprised if they look for something that's a little bit more shatterproof, but still will allow them to make an iPhone that looks absolutely handsome at the end of the contract, just as good as it looked at the beginning of the contract.
I think the most important thing is that by putting metal in the back, it reduces the shatter possibility by 50%.
Yeah, you know, and I guess liquid metal, which Apple has already been experimenting with. I guess the little SIM ejector, that tiny little paperclip kind of guy, was made out of liquid metal in some of North American iPad models.
Just
not
as
all
a
of
test,
them.
Just to see how.
I guess
like,
so.
How does it? You know, yeah, can we manufacture
just
this?
Just to see, yeah, you know, exactly. If anyone noticed. I guess, but that it's lighter, much more dent and scratch resistant. So those things, of course, on a very delicate phone, especially when they do get dropped, and they do every once in a while. You know, if they can withstand like a 3 foot drop and not look like garbage on the other side, yeah, that's
a good start.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But there was a report that was interesting because it reminded me, I've only ever had my hands on one liquid metal product ever. And it looked really cool. It was very, very light, very, very strong. But this report reminded me of one characteristic of it. It bounced really, really bad. Meaning that it doesn't really absorb the impact when you drop and just goes and makes the device go dead. It will actually bounce a couple times off the table. It's not flubber.
that would be awesome. By the way,
I wish I could cite the source for this because it was an interesting point. Liquid metal would be a good thing if it prevents scratches. It would be a bad thing though if it causes it to take that one extra hop when you drop your phone that causes it to land screen down on something hard.
I'm surprised at how often I drop my iPhone and how the fact that it's not cracked yet, because I do it very often.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, when I say often, I mean, like, I can't count anymore how many times it's fallen. I put it in my front pocket like this, and then I lean over.
And then you lean, yeah.
And it comes off.
I had to stop putting my phone in my back pocket because it can also fall out onto
hard things.
Or a toilet, which is a wet thing.
I'm going to move on.
It's bad stuff.
That's all I'm saying. Okay. So in the courts coming up next, Apple is we're gonna hear about the iPad trademark and possibly 4G. Is it legit? But first, Leo's going to talk to us a little bit about GoToMeeting.
Back with more Mac Break Weekly in just a bit. I am time traveling here from beautiful Norway to tell you about GoToMeeting. That's how much I care. GoToMeeting.com. It's the best online meeting software anywhere. You've heard me talk about it before. And now with HD Faces, you can see the people you're meeting with. And the best part is now GoToMeeting works on an iPad too, which is fantastic. I'm downloading the GoToMeeting app on my iPad. It's absolutely free. And then you put GoToMeeting on your computer too, because that's how you start meetings, Mac or PC. And now anybody who joins your meeting, if they've got a camera on their iPad or on their computer, you'll see them, they'll see you. And it makes such a difference when you're doing sales to see whether the client's reacting positively or negatively to that PowerPoint or keynote you're showing them. It makes such a difference when you're doing a team meeting to see the body language. It's how you connect with people, how you get to know people. And GoToMeeting HD Faces, such good video, such high quality. You're just going to love it. You'll feel instantly connected. Even when teams are spread apart by thousands of miles all over the world, GoToMeeting can bring you together. Great way to train, to collaborate, to sell. GoToMeeting. Now, here's the special offer. I know you know this. Just go to GoToMeeting.com. Click that orange Try It Free button, that one right there. And use the promo code MACBREAK. 30 days free of GoToMeeting. The iPad app is free. Have as many meetings as you want for the next 30 days. Really knock yourself out. Show your boss, your clients, your colleagues. Let them know you're trying it out and ask them, what do you think of this? They're going to love it. Everybody we use HD Faces with flips their lid. It's so much better than Skype or anything else you've ever used. GoToMeeting.com. Try it free button. Offer code MACBREAK. And we thank them so much for supporting Mac Break Weekly. Now back to Mac Break Weekly.
Well, that was nice. It was like he was here with us for a second.
Just for a second, though.
Yeah.
But not even here, over there.
Right. Over in his office.
Well, that away. Well, what a lot of people don't know is that the only time traveling office in the studio is Leo's office.
Totally.
I really asked for one. I was really campaigning for one. He was talking about getting one over here, and but he kept it. You know,
well, it's the only way to make sense of how Leo does so much.
Exactly. And sometimes he has to time travel. Sometimes he has to close all the curtains so that people don't realize how often he's coming and going. I mean, it's just one of those things. And we see his car out here like it's been sitting there for a long time. And it really is just because he's been actually jumping centuries while we're here. I mean, that's how he keeps up with all of this.
And now you know.
That's how you know. I usually don't get to tell these secrets, but Leo's not here.
He's not here.
He's not going to even see the show.
Stick around. It gets worse.
The worst part is he's probably already watched the show. And I'm probably going to get a critique like now. You know that thing you said in 20 minutes? Don't say that. I'm going to
He could materialize at any time and change the course of history.
Exactly. And that would just turn the whole thing inside out. So anyway, back to Mac news rather than Leo news. And ProView owns, according to a government official in China, this is according to the State Administration for a senior official from the State Administration for Industry and Commerce. They said that ProView owns ProView owns the iPad trademark. I thought this was just going to go away.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought we were going to.
I was hoping.
I was like, really? And so, evidently, the lawyers are still now. The of course, ProView's lawyers told Reuters on Monday that the firm is negotiating with Apple and would like to, of course, have an out of court settlement. What is the Chinese word for extortion? I just wanted to know. No, Andy, do you think this is actually going to go anywhere?
I have no idea. I'm hopefully too smart to talk about the law in the United States of America. When you go overseas to a communist government that's trying to build an economy any way they possibly can, with lots of people who see money on the ground to be picked up, goodness, I doubly don't know what I'm talking about.
But doesn't this seem like, I mean, this seems, especially now that the Chinese government or someone from one of the administrations starts to step into this, shouldn't this be seen as a very scary precedent? From a country that does an awful lot of exports with the United States, to have them afraid that this isn't really going to turn out.
See, I'm really curious to see how this plays out because this is kind of like a game of chicken, where this company can sort of push it and push it and push it. I think until they get to the point where Apple has to start to talk to people kind of more senior than the judges who are ruling in this company's favor and say, yeah, here's how much money we're pumping into your economy. Here's how much prestige we're putting into your ability to manufacture by allowing you to manufacture our products. Is there something you could do to the brake lines of one of these cars, of one of these corporate people, to make this go away?
Or just say, here, we have a deal for you. You stop pirating our software, and then we can start having these conversations about your trademarks.
Right. I mean, the ProView and the lawyers working for ProView have been very vocal about the fact that they just want to settle. They right. want a settlement. They'd love for this to stay out of the courts. And Apple just isn't really playing along so far. Obviously, they're having conversations behind the scenes, but Apple hasn't said, sure, we'll pony up this amount of money just to make you go away. And then a senior official with the State Administration for Industry and Commerce saying, hey, listen, as far as I can see, ProView's got that iPad trademark, does not mean that that's the way a judge will rule. Right. It is possibly indicative
I think in China, I think it's a little bit more top down, though. So I think it's possibly. a little less predictable here. Don, do you think that do you think Apple's going to sort this out?
Yeah, I mean, they have so much influence over there, I would imagine, you know, with the manufacturing cloud that they've got and the prestige of the brand as well. And I mean, going back to the earnings call, it's something that always fascinates me is just to see how well they're doing internationally. And, you know, China's a big market for Apple. So, you know, I would imagine there's a few. Not so much favors they can call in, but I'm sure there's some pressure they can bring to bear on sort of coming to an amicable agreement. You know, they've got plenty of cash. They could buy their way out of it if they wanted to, but, you know, they might want to not set a precedent and use other techniques to get around this particular thorny problem for them.
Well, and it seems like it's not so much even Apple's influence. It seems like the electronics industry, the businesses that are pumping all this money into the Chinese economy mm-hmm. by building stuff there, feeling like you're not safe. You know, this is a big complaint that they have generally, that their stuff goes in and their technologies are stolen and their movies are copied and, you know, everything else is already happening. This is just another, you know, upset for them that now that they can't trust the copyright laws, that obviously Apple did a fair amount of due diligence before they launched the iPad to make sure that they had all these trademarks sorted out. So the idea that things can change that quickly in China, just if I was an electronics company in general, it would create a concern, I guess. So.
Well, as far as I am, I'm sure you guys have talked about this on MacBreak Weekly in the past, but it's a little muddy how that name was signed off on. ProView says, it was one wing of our, you know, our whole branch, and they made a deal with a company that Apple had cloaked mm-hmm. as an individual company, but it was really just Apple, and nobody would have signed it had we known what was going
on. Well, that's how all these companies do that. Right. I mean, when you do a trademark, when you protect it, when you're going to go out and do a trademark and you want to keep it secret and you don't want to pay 100 times more, you're going to put out
a bunch
of shell
Apple,
companies.
They would have asked for many, many, many more dollars.
Exactly. So yeah, especially if you find out you're the last one.
Exactly.
So we'll see how that goes. Also, Apple is claiming that its 4G labeling is legit in Australia. So, of course, this was the whole issue about, you know, we put out an iPad that says 4G ready, which it is in the United States, but not necessarily in, you know, down under.
Yeah, well, okay. So the way that I feel about this is, I guess as a consumer, if I felt duped into buying an iPad that was supposed to have 4G speeds that were above and beyond anything else I could get in Australia, that would suck. But it's like, you know, the iPad can't just magically make the pipe bigger,
right?
So it's constrained by what is offered in your country.
Right.
It seems to me, on the packaging, on the website, that Apple was fairly clear that, hey, we're calling it the 4G because 4G is sort of this generic term for faster speeds, right? But 4G means a lot of different things.
And it's not none of the only two that this is, and I believe this is according to the Washington Post, but the only two that are truly 4G are the LTE Advanced and WiMAX Release 2, which aren't widely deployed. I don't think they're deployed anywhere. I mean, I don't think you can get, because true 4G is 100 megabits a mm-hmm. second.
But nobody has speeds doing like that.
So we have to realize that all of this is made up.
That's the problem. It's like, you can say, well, I don't get that kind of 4G. It's like, all right, well, why do we keep saying 4G? Well, just because it's the next bump up from 3G,
generation.
Really. I think it's easier for people to understand than HSPA Plus and WiMAX and what. I don't know what any of this is. Let's call it 4G. Because that sounds modern.
Right.
But it's confusing.
Yeah, I think outside of the US, it wasn't really pushed as this magical new networking speed. It was mentioned that it's available in the US, but that was it. And, you know, Sarah says it hasn't really been heavily promoted over here. It just says it's compatible with, you know, fast networks.
Because it's not available, right? There's not 4G. You don't have 4G in the UK, right?
I think there's a pilot in London. I think there's again, I wouldn't know which variant or which flavor it is, but I know there's a pilot. One of the service providers is doing a pilot in London. But, you know, the iPad was never touted as being anything other than we already knew what it to be. So from my point of view, anyway, it was really a non-issue. And I think the Australians seem to have taken umbrage with it in a lot more depth than other countries. I mean, I've not really heard anything in the UK about people being upset about it or it being... And don't forget, we have actually brought Apple to task many a time on their promotional material. And I don't think they haven't raised any issues with this time around.
Now Apple has offered, of course, to refunds to Australian customers who felt like they were misled. But then, of course, they would have to give them back.
Yes. So I would love to see the figures to see how many refunds and returns they'd had. I'd probably count it on the fingers of one hand, to be honest.
Yeah, I think like a lot of people that want to complain about the fact that it's not 4G. Are they really going to take the iPad 3 back?
It'd be a great PR move, though.
Andy, what do you see? Do you see hundreds or tens or thousands going back to Apple?
Yeah, this is just like that really big like moment that you have with your boss saying that it's absolutely horrible that I have to work like an extra half an afternoon on Saturday. I will not stand for this. Well, we don't want you to compromise your principles. If you have to quit, well, we're sorry, but we will understand that you have to take this stand. Oh wait, okay, that's okay. I really just wanted to like get next. I really want to just get an hour on lunch break for Saturday instead of a half an hour. You wonder really why they went to all this to all this hullabaloo just to for a high speed network that would never have been available in that country anywhere. I think it's more interesting the controversy about AT&T suddenly upgrading every single iPhone 4S to a 4G model with a new version of the OS. That too is another one of those things that if the governing body as such as it is that regulates that standard such as it does. So
Andy,
doing so well.
Okay, there is can be called 4G. We're going to let you do that, but realize the next time you do it, you're going to be yellow carded, sir.
Yellow carded or red carded? Is it? I think they already got the yellow card. I think that's the. Anyway, so a lot of soccer there. So, see, I'm just trying to prove that I actually know something about soccer. I still don't. I glossed
my knowledge with yellow card. I know the yellow card comes before the red card, but that's it.
Yeah, I don't. I still don't understand offense. Offsides. I don't understand.
We're really talking about soccer.
I'm just going to move on. I'm just going to move on because I can't. I don't want to get into a conversation about offsides.
So it's sort of like in perfect world, Australian government says this is deceptive marketing. So what happens, right? So let's say Apple has to.
But I think Apple. What Apple?
You know, what they just drop the word 4G
really fast. Yeah. I think I would just change it to really fast. I would just do it RF
really fast.
People might make a mistake of radio frequency, but I would just say R5. I mean RF. Really fast.
It's not as though they actually called it the iPad 4G or anything, though, is it? It's just in the marketing material that it does mention its compatibility with 4G networks. But I don't know, again, on the Australian site, whether or not it actually mentions that.
I do think in the bottom of the ad, they could say, when you visit the United States, it will be really faster.
Yeah. In fact, it's funny that this is we're having this conversation because Apple, more than ever, doesn't even want anything associated with the word iPad. It's the new iPad. That's what it is. Now, talk amongst yourselves about which models you have.
We will leave that up to you.
But it's new iPad. That's what we're calling it. So,
yes. Yeah. So now moving from the iPad back to the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to put the iPad back because this is Mac Break. We're working very hard to talk about Macs every once in a while. It looks like MacBook Pros Could go all quad core with the first wave of Ivy Bridge processors. So hopefully we might see these sometime soon, and they could be quad core, which means that they'd be blazing fast. Don, do you think do you see yourself needing a new MacBook Pro?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I've been using a Mac Pro as my main production machine, really, for my editing and stuff.
A MacBook Pro or a Mac Pro?
A Mac Pro. I've been using a Mac Pro, and about 2 months ago now, I said, right, I'll still keep my Mac Pro, but I'm actually going to use my MacBook Air as my main production machine. So I've actually been sort of using my MacBook Air as my main machine for my editing and stuff, and it's been working great. I got a Thunderbolt display, and I got a Thunderbolt drive for storage, and I've been really happy with it. It could do with just a little touch more power, and so if they did bring out quad-core MacBook Pros, but in a new styly, you know, in a MacBook Air styly, that would be very tempting, I have to say. I would seriously consider upgrading to a MacBook Pro, but one of these nice new thin jobbies, you know, not these great big bulky old-fashioned things that people have these days.
I find that the biggest thing that makes a difference with performance is actually the hard drive. So I've, you know, we have RAIDs built into most of our Mac Pros, so we just take the three slots, the extra slots, and we just put cheap, you know, 7200 RPM drives in there, and then RAID zero them, and we call them scary RAIDs to remind us that, you know, it's scary because you'll lose anything on there if it goes bad. But the they run about 300 megs a second. And what's crazy is my SSD drive that sits inside of this runs 200 megs a second. That sits inside of my 17-inch. Mm-hmm. And if someone's thinking about how fast their computer has to be, I think the first thing you want to think about investing into is SSD. Because, you know, all these, you talk about all these, you know, these processors. I haven't seen significant processor changes that have really affected me as much as that.
Well, so that was going to be my question for you. We hear quad-core processors coming down the line. You did mention that you like your 17-inch MacBook Pro, partly because of the screen real estate, but partly because it's just a beefed-up system. But that doesn't sound like it would be sufficient just to have the quad-core processor.
Yeah, no, I will.
Because you need the space.
I have to admit that I... when I get these, I feel like, you know, time is usually of the essence when we buy these, and so they're the fastest processors, you know, the largest SSD drives, the, you know, like everything that we can make it work, because we're usually sitting on a set somewhere and we have to turn over a 1 hour event, you know, to YouTube or whatever as fast as we possibly can, and so that's kind of our stress point. And we have learned that the other problem you get into when you start speeding up the processors and you start speeding up the drives is that that you can actually thump the computer in a compressor, just in case you're wondering. If you get really good at using the distributed rendering, I have these little, you know, I don't know if you guys have iStat menu. Do you use iStat menu?
Mm-mm.
iStat menu.
Yeah, I do.
Here's an early pick. I don't know how anyone lives without iStat menu. Just saying. So you live with it.
I'm living and breathing, but maybe my life is like a way crappier version of what it should be.
I'm about to. This is a little a Mac based rat hole. Just thought I'd let you guys know. But you can't. You have to put this on. So it's 14 days for free. Just try it, and once you put it on, you'll never take it off again. So what it does is it gives you all this performance background, so you can always look and see. I can see what my network performance is, so my upload and download speeds.
Yeah, no, that's great.
All my processors. And what's really great is when you get this, you always know that you've set up a compressor. Oh, sorry. Hold on.
Oh, I just wondered if this was the right screenshot.
Yeah, oh, that's what I've got.
That's it. Yeah, and but I'll show you. Hold on, let me.
So it's $16, but you've got a
$16
a trial period.
And you can do a trial period decide whether I'm crazy or not. But
it looks like they have Mac versions, iPad, and iPhone versions.
I haven't used the other ones.
That's pretty cool.
I think they have other apps. I think Bajango has other apps, but.
If
you look at if you look at my screen, you'll see this. Can you see the top of my screen in the capture, Eileen?
Yeah, she should.
I will try. Hold on.
My problem is like now there's so much going on at the top of the screen, and I'm distracted.
I know, but it's very important because you know that you know the thing is a you can see all of my you know, I can see what my network speeds are.
Yeah,
I can see what my processor usage is. I can also see what's using my processor, because a lot of times Firefox with Flash will just start. You suddenly hear the fans turn on, and you're trying to figure out what's causing it. And you can just turn on the CPU and go, oh, Firefox is using up 400% or 300% of my whatever, and so I can turn it off. And anyway, so...
I think I'm getting the back of the TV. Sorry.
Oh, well, there you go. That's not going to work.
That's not gonna
so anyway,
work.
Well,
There's no better feeling, though, is there, Alex, when you're encoding something and you switch over to iStat menu and you see all four cores or all eight cores pumping away at full max, and you know then that you've done the right thing.
You know that everything is fully operational. But the one thing that we learned is that if we did it too if we added too many virtual servers or whatever to it, it'll speed up and then you'll get a little gray screen. That in many languages, the Mac doesn't quite know what to do with that much speed. So anyway, those are, I don't know why we started talking about that.
We started talking about it because we were talking about the idea of a quad core processor.
Yes.
Versus the kind of machines you're using now.
The only other thing with the quad core is heat as well, especially in a laptop. I hope they have the correct thermal management to keep heat down. But of course, if they do bring out a new range, again, rumor, but whether or not we'll see a Retina display on the new laptops at the next rev when they do bring out these new processors, or whether or not that's too early, I would like to see a Retina display.
I have to admit, when the iPad 3 came out, or whatever they call it, the new iPad came out, it literally hurt my eyes for like the first half an hour. Did it hurt your eyes?
No, it did not.
It hurt my eyes.
Why did it hurt?
It was
your
so
eyes?
Sharp, it hurt my eyes, and now everything looks like it's out of focus. Like it was like,
you felt like you had the wrong prescription glasses.
I know.
On.
I was like, what is wrong?
It's so clear.
And now I look at everything, and it's all like
glasses. Well, I've actually gone to get new prescription glasses because I felt I wasn't getting the full benefit from it because it was so sharp. And then when I went to the iPad 2, I thought, my goodness, it's broken. But then,
yes,
oh no, it's
that
not.
That was what I noticed. Like when I got my hands on the new iPad for the first time, I said, I guess I can see that it's a little nicer, but right. I don't know. It kind of looks the same until
back.
I went back to second gen, and then it's like, oh, I'm underwater. I can barely see anything. The pixel.
How does anyone use this? Anyone use the thing I've been using for the last 2 years? Yeah, exactly.
Mm. It's easy to get used to Retina display for sure.
So, Andy, do you think that the new processors are coming out this spring?
Yeah, definitely. I think that not only is it just a good thing to always make sure that the MacBooks have parity with the speed and power of Windows machines that cost $400 less, I think that they need to make sure that there's always a distinction between the MacBook Pro line and the MacBook Air line. There has to be, for that extra $250, there has to be a really emphatic statement that if you don't care about having something that's super, super thin and super, super light, and you can forego another 3 or 4 hours for the battery life, here is something where you really can use this as your desktop machine and live your entire world off of this one machine. I don't think the MacBook Air is quite there yet. It really is kind of a throwback to the original PowerBooks, where you have your real Macintosh, your iMac or your Mac Pro, your G4 Mac on the desktop, but then you could sort of make a smaller version of your world that would fit on this 128 gig hard drive, and you can make your MacBook Air 13-inch work for little excursions like that. But I really think that Apple needs to have really, really kick-butt processors and a really, really kick-butt MacBook Pro so that it really earns that Pro title, or else there's no reason to have the MacBook Pro.
Well, and I think that as a MacBook Pro user, I do find it very important that I get almost everything that they have connected here. So, the three USB, the FireWire, this is kind of the all-in-one. I'm on the road and I have to connect the things. I've got an express slot if I need it. I've got all the different pieces. I've got the speed, so I think that it is important to have something like that. Now, of course, I may not have it for much longer.
What do you mean, Alex? What could possibly go wrong?
There's some rumors that they're going to take my 17-inch away.
I think these rumors are true. And I have a 17-inch MacBook Pro as well. And for many reasons, I love it. But it's not very portable. It's heavy. And I do a lot of traveling. And, I walk into and from work every day. And this is my computer.
I'm telling you, it's a good workout.
Yeah, it is a good workout. But I think also, I've had this conversation with people because they always laugh at me and say, well, how big is your MacBook Pro? I mean, it's bigger than you. And I say, no, but it's very nice when you've got it here in front of you. I mean, this is a full computer. Nothing right. about it seems flimsy or anything.
Right.
But it's better if it doesn't move around all that often. See, I only have a laptop as a computer. I do not have a Mac Pro. I don't have an iMac.
Too.
I don't have anything at home. So whatever I've got has got to be fold-upable, put it in a bag, take it with you, and not really, give my shoulder bruises too often. But that's kind of what the 17-inch does. even though it's a beautiful machine, I don't think it's good if you're a single computer kind of person.
The advantage, though, is if you put two of them in your backpack, just in case you're wondering, you can leave it in the airport. And you're not really worried about people trying to run away with it because you know you could catch up with them. You know, they'll pick it up and realize they're trying to steal the wrong bag. You know, so, as long as to me, it's really more about performance. We know that we're going to get higher resolution screens. So I think that, because the issue that we have is a lot of times we're doing screen captures and I need the full 1920 by 1200.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really need to have that screen capture at that resolution without hooking up another monitor because I'm on the road. The other issue for me is, as I said, having all the power that's in here. And the 15 inch is, literally, I always go into this, should I buy a 15 inch? And I get right up there, and the screen resolution has been the only thing stopping me because it taps out right before the 1920 by.
Yeah, but with the Retina display, though, they might get around that problem.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you might necessarily need to have a 17-inch. And I think another thing to factor into the equation as well, when they're sort of looking at the pro range of laptops, is that they don't really need to worry too much about portability anymore, because I think the iPad, for a lot of pro users as well, the iPad's starting to become their portable computing device. So, you know, the laptop, again, as I mentioned before, it sort of becomes your laptop becomes your removable desktop, whereas your portable device, you know, if you go to a conference or something, there's no way I'll be carrying a laptop around with me. I'll just take my iPad and use that for, you know, 95% of the stuff that I need to do on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, to have the truck back at base where you can go and, you know, dump all your video stuff and do your editing and compression stuff, you know, that's the sort of, I think, the area they'll be focusing in on. And if they do bring in the Retina technology with the laptop range, you know, they can actually compress quite a lot of power into a small device, but don't have to worry about it being too portable, really.
Well, I think that one of the problems, though, is that the Apple's iCloud solution is not, you know,
a perfect system?
No. I mean, I think that they have to really work on figuring out how to get the truly create a virtual experience. I mean, so I do a lot. I mean, obviously we do stuff with iCloud, but an enormous amount of my company runs on Google Docs. You know, a lot of the stuff here runs on Google Docs. And the thing is that once there's a lot of things I complain about with Google Docs. I mean, there's a lot of things that frustrate me. And there's a lot of things I get angry about. But I have to say that the idea that everybody's working on the same document, that I can open my computer up in any computer and just open it up and start working and going through the stuff, it is, once you get used to that, you cannot go back. And the fact that the Apple Office tools don't allow me to do that, mm-hmm. you know, reduces the amount we use them. You know, and if Google, that the spreadsheets in Google weren't so completely heinous. You know,
and they are.
Oh, boy.
They're heinous. So, yeah, but that's what we got.
I'm using Microsoft Cloud Drive a lot as my replacement for Google Docs. I don't like any single one component of them. I know that the Google Docs apps, they're very, very good for what they do, and their big, big feature is just the simple fact, as you say, they work on every single browser so that the computer becomes irrelevant. But it's just not an environment that I can work in. But Don, I mean, I totally agree with you. I mean, I'm going to be gone for a little bit less than a week here. I'm giving a presentation. I'm going to be doing lots of work. This is the first time that I've put such faith in my iPad that I've actually left my MacBook at home for this entire trip. I'm Skyping right here from an iPad.
Wow.
Earlier today, when Google Drive got released, I just VPN'd back to my iMac, back in my office, through the iPad to do those one or two quick things that needed to be done on a desktop operating system. But other than that, I'm doing presentations from this. I'm doing all my word processing from it. I'm doing some project management from it. This is really this is the dog food test for me for the iPad, because before now, and with OS 4 and with the previous generation of iPad, it was something that if I were gone for maybe just an overnight or maybe just two nights, especially if, like, I'm giving a presentation, but that presentation is very, very simple and it's completely locked down. I know I'm not going to have to make any really big edits to it. Then I would say, okay, in this case, I can take my iPad with me. But now, I'll either fly or I'm going to die with just spending a week in Europe with just an iPad and a keyboard.
Now, what do you think of the idea of this kind of hybrid that's being, you know, CNET has an article about this, the Apple, the next laptop could kind of match halfway in between the MacBook Pro and the Mac and the MacBook Air. Does that seem like a possibility of trying to find a happy medium between the two?
Well, in terms of design, I could believe that. I could certainly believe them trying to make something as powerful as a MacBook Pro with the same advantages of size and weight as a MacBook Air. I think that they're starting to have a few collisions because I'm having a hard time seeing the real need for an 11-inch Air right now, because I don't think I think the 11-inch is the least successful of the Air line, because you have it's a small form factor. You have a small screen, which makes you have to really adjust the way that you work in order to make these smaller components really work for you. Meanwhile, you've got this really wonderful iPad here, which you can kit out as a top of the line machine with a keyboard, with all the accessories, with all the software you need to make it into something that can do, I would say, 85 to 90% of what a MacBook Air 11-inch can do, with the added advantage of also being a really good ebook reader, a really good comic book reader, a really good movie player. So I still see the relevance of the 13-inch Air. I'm having a harder and harder time thinking of a use case in which I would recommend the 11-inch Air to anybody, because if they're looking for the 11-inch Air, they are willing to accept sort of something less than a full laptop experience. And if you're going to go for something less than a full laptop experience, why not save a couple $100 and get a battery that lasts 4 hours longer and wind up with an iPad?
Well, I think the problem is that if you really need a keyboard, that's why I have an 11.
You have an 11-inch MacBook.
So it's like a little shuttle.
You have the
Starship Enterprise, and then it's like a little shuttle that has to go out.
You've got, I mean, Andy's going, he's leaving the country for a week, and he has his iPad and his keyboard because he thinks it's sufficient. I mean, that's the problem I have, too, is when I really need to, like, hammer out an email quickly, right. I have to reach for the laptop because it's OS X the way that I'm used to, and I just need to do something real quick in a tab.
Yeah, right.
And the iPad still requires me to think a little bit differently about how to arrive at the same place.
It's still a very unitasky sort of thing. The biggest difficulty is always what happens when I need to look something up in a web page while I'm writing something. And there's just no the fact that Apple doesn't even allow you to do, if you got the keyboard hooked up, you can't even do a command tab just to simply quickly do the equivalent of the multi-finger stroke to switch between apps. Apple, I really hope that Apple starts to appreciate that there are people who are using a keyboard to turn the iPad into a real computer, and they give them, and I wish they would give us some of that sort of extra desktop experience into the iPad without compromising the iPad experience.
I find it pretty difficult to do, and the cutting and pasting, like I want to get something from one application into another, is so, I find very painful.
You know what also drives me absolutely bat crazy? Mm-hmm. Is, okay, I've got a file somewhere that I've been working on my iPad. Okay, and then I'm back into my email, and I think, oh, yeah, I've got that thing I want to attach. Can't do that.
Yes.
You have to attach it from the program that it was created in.
Yes.
And it doesn't come up to, on a daily basis, but when it does, it is so frustrating.
Well, and then you have to hit share, and then you have to remember who all the people that you were. You're
well,
like,
and it breaks your email thread.
Right. All you want to do is hit reply and put it in there.
That's right.
But instead, you have to do this.
Gosh, that makes me nuts.
That's why I go back to my 11-inch.
Right. That's why I think that there is a market for people who want something that's kind of the same form. Well, not the same form factor, but almost the same size and weight mm-hmm. as, let's say, an iPad. But there's a keyboard attached. It's OS X. It's right. not iOS. I know a lot of folks, Leo included, who love their 11-inch. They seem a little too small for me.
I like it in economy. When I'm sitting in economy, which I sit in a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, and also I have to say,
it's the only place I sit.
Yeah, full screen in line goes a long way to making it a much more pleasurable experience using the 11-inch, because you know it feels like the full screen mode was actually made for the 11-inch, because that then makes it a lot easier to switch between screens and to use up most of the screen real estate. But going back to your original point though about the new laptops and whether or not we'll see a hybrid of the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro, I think that the thing that's going to sort of make or break it is what they do with the ports and whether or not they do still go ahead and do we think really at the next pro level laptop they're still going to include a FireWire port?
Well, that was one of the questions on the online. Someone from our IRC chat was asking about that. Do we think FireWire is going to stay around, or is Thunderbolt the new FireWire? Andy, do you think Thunderbolt is replacing it?
Yeah, I think Thunderbolt's going to replace FireWire. I really do think that Apple wants that thinner form factor. I'd be surprised if they ditched the Mac Pro line just yet. I still think that there are so many trade-offs when you're going to an SSD. because they're people who just don't have that kind of money to put in to get an upgrade to a 512 gig SSD that even a 256 gig is not going to do. I don't think that the MacBook Air as it's created right now is good for those people who can only afford to have one really, really big, really, really good laptop. One really, really good computer. They can't afford to have like the big, big honking desktop and then they're super lightweight. They need to have one machine that handles everything for them. And right now, I don't think the MacBook Air has been really covered for them. So I'd be surprised if it's this year that you start to see the end of the MacBook Pro line with the spinning hard drive and with the full festoonery ports on the sides.
Now, there is a report on the antivirus flashback still infects more than 500,000 Macs. So this is really the first virus that we've seen that actually got out into the wild in a long time. I mean, you know, you hear about viruses, but this one is still rooting around. So this is something that people still have to pay attention to. Don, is there a way to? And it's not. I'm being corrected that it's not a virus, but
it's malware. Apple should have pushed through the flashback malware software update. And as long as you're updating,
right.
As long as you pay attention to software update when it prompts you, you're good to go.
There's people like me that don't. And the reason is we're in production and we get pretty superstitious.
It's I don't have 5 minutes right now to restart.
No, it's not even that I don't have 5 minutes. It's like I'm in the middle of production, and if it does something I don't expect it to all the applications that I have, I don't want to change anything.
Right.
When I was working in Star Wars, I think we used After Effects 3.1 or 3.0 or something like that. And 4, like there was like a whole nother. It was like a whole different application by the time we got out of the movie because we didn't want to. No one wanted to change anything because you didn't want to change it. What you had to save, you didn't want to change how things interact. And so that's always the challenge with any kind of upgrades. And so some people will ignore that for a long time because they don't want to change those pieces. But this one might be worth it. I think that's all we want. Andy, is this a real concern?
Yeah, it really is. This isn't one of those theoretical, if the right sequence of events happens, then maybe someone could maybe turn this into a real thing. No, people are really getting infected with this sort of stuff. It's not so widespread that everybody knows someone who has an infection, but it's not difficult to find people who ran their utility and got the bad news instead of the good news. So yeah, you definitely got to install this. You definitely got to make sure that you change your attitude towards updates because stuff just got real for the Mac community right now, where this suddenly became something that has to be on your radar. This idea of malware infesting your system.
And there is, just so people know, there is a specific flashback malware removal tool on the Apple site. I think you can just search through support. I'm because the direct link is not something that's easy to say on the air. So,
right.
I think the issue with this, though, Alex, is that, and I think for the first time, it's a malware exploit that's been delivered without you knowing about it. In the past, we've always felt technically savvy, and we wouldn't go to suspicious websites, we wouldn't click on links where we thought, we're going to do that. This time, it was like a drive-by software install. You just literally had to just visit a site that had the infection and you could actually get it on your machine. So, it's a lot more serious in that respect. So, no matter how careful you'd been, there's still a chance that you might have actually got this particular malware. And I think that sort of changes the whole way we should start looking at these things and take them a bit more seriously now.
All right, before we get into some of the other news on MacBreak Weekly this week, let's toss it over to the time traveler himself, Leo Laporte.
Actually,
Do you need to go, Andy?
Yeah, sorry. I do need to go, so there's a good chance for me to leap out. I probably need to start going through security, start taking things out of my pockets. There's an alarming amount of metal objects and batteries.
Removing the Swiss Army knives from your pockets, but the usual. All right, Andy, well, have a great flight. Thanks so much for joining us from en route.
Exactly. Nice talking to you guys. Have a great week.
Bye-bye. See you next week on MacBreak Weekly. All right. On to Leo, time traveler extraordinaire.
Thanks, Sarah Moore with us, Sarah and Company on MacBreak Weekly. Just a little bit, I wanted to take a minute to tell you about our friends at Gazelle, GAZELLE.com. They've really focused Gazelle down to their 13 top products that they sell, the ones that almost everybody sells on Gazelle.com. That means it's an easier experience for you. You can get in there, you can click and get right to the product you want, whether it's an iPhone, or want to sell, I should say, whether it's an iPhone, an iPad, an Android phone. They support some Galaxy phones. many of the Android phones. Gazelle is incredible because when you know, just go there, gazelle.com, and let's say you got an old iPad, you want to get the new one, just enter it in. You'll see immediately how much it's worth, and then you could take a check, PayPal, or my favorite, an Amazon gift card, and you get an additional 5% when you do that. And they take care of everything. They wipe the data, they check it out, and they send you a check right away. They even pay the postage. So it really is a great deal. The point being, though, none of these products are getting more valuable. Maybe in 100 years they'll be antiques. But right now they're dropping in price, and they're dropping fast. So every day you wait is some money less you're going to get, a buck or two less you're going to get. So go to, don't wait. You've heard me talk about it. You've been putting it off. Clear out that gadget closet. Go to gazelle.com. Find out how much your product is worth. Trade up to something new, a new iPhone or a new iPad or a new Mac. GAZELLE.com. Mail it to Gazelle. They pay for the shipping, and you get paid fast. Check PayPal or Amazon gift card. Remember, you get an extra 5%. Gazelle, GAZELLE.com. Try it right now. Don't put it off. Don't put it off. No procrastination here. It's going to cost you.
Thanks, Leo. You're the best.
And then he's
so
back.
So is Gazelle, actually.
He just comes in.
I know.
And then he's gone.
And he thought he was in Norway. Au contraire.
So anyway, there is. Have you heard about the Steve Jobs lost tapes?
Okay, so I tend to I'm sort of the camp that feels like we've got the Steve Jobs biography, then we have the variety of other biographies that are more unofficial, and then the people coming out of the woodwork saying, "Well, I used to visit him, you know, once a month in his home in the last days." And I guess I'm starting to get to the point where I think I'm fascinated with the man. He was obviously a genius in many ways, a very interesting person, a very complex individual. But how many more of these lost interviews are we going to unearth?
Do you think that he would say that too? Like, okay, y'all have to move on now.
Well, that's a good question because I think that he was pretty aware of the fact that he was a brilliant mind.
And I also think that they spent a lot of time institutionalizing his approach to things at Apple when he had this kind of brush with death earlier. Mm-hmm. So I think there was a lot of effort at Apple. I mean, we've read reports that there was a lot of effort at Apple to make sure that they kind of document, a certain approach, a certain, piece of that. Don, do you think that, have you heard much from these lost tapes?
Yeah, I had to read through the article. I mean, it's quite interesting. I think there's still a lot we can learn from the guy. I mean, obviously he Sarah said he's a genius and he did a lot. And the nice thing about this particular article is that it tends to focus more on the sort of wilderness years, after he left Apple and before he went back again, and what he actually did with Pixar and Next and stuff, and how that sort of molded him to lead to the Apple that we know now. So I think, without getting too mawkish or sentimental and those sorts of articles, I think where we can actually learn about what he did and his approach to various things, I think there's still a lot we can learn about, how he actually sort of made all those major improvements and sort of changed from what he was to what he became. So, I still find it fascinating, really. And I'm still looking for I still enjoyed the biography, but it wasn't quite what I was looking for. It didn't quite cover the aspects of Steve Jobs that I'm particularly interested in, with having the sort of the interest in Apple and its technologies and its history. So I'm sure we'll see plenty more of these sort of coming out of the woodwork. And as long as they're genuine, as long as they're authentic, and as long as they don't start repeating themselves ad nauseum, I don't mind. I'm quite interested in learning more about the guy.
I think what it really shows you also is that he just was very focused on the same thing all the time. Like, he really wanted to revolutionize the way education worked. And, mm-hmm. and in a lot of ways, a lot of people talk about the iBook, and the iBook author, and a lot of what those things are real. Those were real passionate projects for him, of being able to kind of turn that inside out, because he.
I think one of the things that people focus on with Steve Jobs is we all have obsessions and we'd all love to revolutionize all sorts of things, but to actually say, and then look what I made.
Well, and to stay focused on it.
And I changed the entire industry. Yeah. That's rare.
And to be able to stay focused on it and really pay attention to what's important in that area.
Right.
I think it's a lot of times what's hard is that you get into an industry and you understand that there's stuff missing, but you're so deep into it, you can't figure out what's truly important, mm-hmm. like how to distill it down into something that can actually move forward. And I think that that's one of the things that made him different, is a lot of people have great ideas, but he was able to distill that down into an actionable plan, and keep people focused on an actual plan. So So anyway, it is interesting. So we'll see. I'm sure there'll be more books coming out. Also, you know, do you guys use Instagram?
Oh yes, every day.
Don, do you use Instagram?
I have it on my phone, but I must admit I tend not to use it. I'm of the opinion that, you know, I like to take photographs, but I don't like to make them all muddy and dirty and filters and stuff. I can't quite get my head around that, to say.
To ruin a perfectly good photo with a...
Yeah, but there's a whole subset of Instagram users who hashtag no filter because they agree with you.
Are you still part
of the community.
There you go.
I tried to start a new group called Filter Free. It didn't catch on, but I tried.
That was one of those great ideas that
you weren't able to focus. Steve Jobs, there'd be a whole product line built around filter free. But
now the thing is, those filters are great if you've got a pretty crappy camera. So if it's, you know, on the old iPhone when the camera was abysmal, those filters actually did a good job. But now we've got these really high res, beautiful photos that we can get on an iPhone. I don't really like messing about with the filters too much.
Yeah. So anyway, with Instagram. The senior vice president, Phil Schiller, dumps Instagram when they expanded to Android and didn't just stop using it, which is what I do. I didn't do it out of protest or anything else. I just got bored.
There's a difference between neglecting and deleting.
Exactly. So not only did he didn't just neglect it, he killed it. And then he tweeted that he killed it. It was a very clear message to the folks at Instagram that he wasn't amused.
Well, according to Schiller, the app jumped the shark when the Android community was allowed in. And that's...
Really?
I
thought that was a little... I
think that's very petty, actually.
I do, too.
I also think it's very petty that so many iOS users were like, ew, Instagram people are in here now. This sucks. These pictures are going to suck. And then there were a lot of comparisons. This is what the iPhone can take of that... old truck out in the backyard, and this is what the Android picture can take, and look how muddy that second picture is. And it's like, I mean, are you guys for real?
Exactly. I mean, and as soon as you take, because I have to say, arguably, you know, the Galaxy 2S, which is my other phone, is, I mean, the pictures it takes are gorgeous, you know, and that would be the place that I would. I do think it's silly. I mean, I don't. As I said, to me, it seemed like an awful much ado about nothing.
It was a bit strange
to actually make a big deal.
It was before the takeover from Facebook as well, so that wasn't sort of anything to do with it. It was just the fact that there was a lot of discussions going around at the time when the Android client came out. And I'm not sure if it was a fully featured. I mean, I don't use Android, so I don't know. I'm not sure if it was a fully featured client or not. But there was lots of discussions going around the internet. And I don't know. But it seems strange for him to actually pull the plug and do it so publicly as well. Although I think it was just in reference to someone who sent him an email or a tweet, and he perhaps mightn't have expected it to be publicized. But of course, if you're someone like Phil Schiller, anything you say or do is going to attract attention. So perhaps he should have been a little bit more careful.
Well, I will say, from a calculating perspective, him publicly doing that tells a lot of other iPhone developers that he does care. That you know, it does matter to Apple if you are in the Apple, you know, sphere, or if you're just doing it, you know, if you're just out there making apps for anybody, you know. And I think that but I think that for a large one of the most popular apps out there, it doesn't matter. But I think that that definitely can affect the trajectory of smaller app developers who are thinking about, well, should I dip into the Android, world? And realizing, like, as I'm building up, I'm doing pretty well in iOS. And the thing you have to worry about when you do this, and I think that this is the underlying thing, while it to me it does seem petty in some ways, but the underlying communication is, we have to remember that there is no, the way the App Store works, the way all that stuff works, is very centralized. And we have to remember that, you know, there's just someone picking that. Right. So getting on the wrong side of, getting on the wrong side of that picking process is very expensive, you know, to a developer.
And this doesn't necessarily have to be a big knock on Android. Before Instagram was available on Android, it already had a huge community. What, 30 million or so?
Right.
And I've noticed with some of my friends who have a lot of followers, you tend to get like a degradation of cool comments. You know, you have a lot of people saying, please check out my profile. And it's like, ugh, this is all just kind of spammy. There's too many people. It's growing too exponentially. So the fact that a bunch of Android users were starting to jump on board, and they did. I mean, I think it gained, 5 million users in its first weekend on Android. tends to just kind of maybe dilute the experience. It's not so much a knock on a rival operating system.
You think,
I guess I'm just trying to say, if Phil Schiller isn't being really petty against Android, what is the reason?
I think in the surface, it looks petty, but I think that in the deeper end of things, I think it is a communication to smaller app developers and developers who think they're going to just, you know, go out that it does matter to Apple that you're, you know, it's a very subtle way of saying that Apple does care about whether people are exclusively working with the iPhone, you know, the iOS infrastructure, or whether they're not. And again, for a large successful app, it won't matter. For a for a smaller developer who is just starting to get moving, when you know that most people who are buying applications are on the iOS, and free is really the most successful solution on the Android, I think that's still pretty much the case. If you're trying to make a business out of it, it may make you think twice about doing both at the same time, for instance. You know, that you might, and it's not that Apple would ignore you, but they might pay more attention to you because you are, because you're doing something that's more specific. So, who knows? Also, Tim Cook, of course, now is, he has made Time's 100 most influential people. So he just...
I should hope so.
He's moved in. He just moved in. Steve moved out. He moved right in. Yeah. It's, you know, that's, but, you know, if you are, it turns out that if you are the CEO of the largest publicly traded company in the United States, people think that you have some say in this.
Are somehow influencing others.
Somehow. Somehow having an effect on other people's decisions. So anyway, we just thought we'd let you all know, just in case you're wondering how Tim's doing. But now it's time for our tips of the week.
Hooray!
And, who is doing the macOS tip? Because Andy left. Was that you, John?
Oh,
Can we throw you one? I'll give you a minute.
All right, give me a minute then. Go on.
I'll do the iOS tip. I think Andy put the Andy usually does it, and then he left.
Yeah, I think what we see in our personal doc here is Andy's tip.
Yes, creates
smart playlists.
So that, you know, Andy's tip was going to be something we won't say it because he might want to.
He might want to use it next time. He might want to do it next week when he hosts
yes,
the show.
Yes, exactly. We don't want to remove that quality pick from Andy's environment. So my iOS pick may seem simple, but it's very useful. So I have you have the smart little.
I do the smart cover. I use it both as a cover and as my.
And when you shut it, does it? Wait, turn it on.
Yeah, it works fine.
And when you shut it, oh, it's still off.
Oh, that's weird.
You turn it on first. I think when you turn it off, or did the battery die? Oh,
no.
There you go.
See, that was weird. It's never done that before. Until just now.
Just because it was near mine.
Performance anxiety.
Because mine was talking to it. Saying,
maybe so.
I
don't. The magnets you're talking about, not a problem. And this is the smart cover that I bought with the iPad too.
See, I find that to be a bug, not a feature. So see this?
Yeah.
See, mine sticks and everything else, but when I go like this, it doesn't.
It doesn't turn on the way it's supposed to.
It doesn't turn on, and that's actually a very important thing for me. Okay, so here's the deal. The problem with this little magnet thing is that yeah, it turns on when you go like this, but it also turns on. Can you see this? Do you have an overhead camera? You can't see it.
My overhead camera, that's fine. I have one, but it's over Sarah.
That's fine. So,
so I need to get my roots done. Actually, doing that tomorrow.
So so when you turn it this way, that's fine, and that's what you wanted to do. But when here's the big problem is I've already established that I put a couple laptops in my backpack, you know, in the little slot.
Yeah.
Then I throw this in the little slot. Mm-hmm. And then here's what happens is that it gets pushed like that, just a little bit. And then every time I pull it out, the battery's dead.
What?
So this is the little tip, is just to know that when that happens, right there, it'll turn on.
This is why you consider it a bug.
It'll turn on, and then it'll just burn your battery all the way to the ground.
So
it'll just keep on going like this.
I throw my my iPad and my MacBook Air in my little messenger bag every day.
I think
a bunch of other stuff, and I've never had this problem, not once.
I have a lot of stuff in my slot.
I mean, you might just need a better bag.
It's a great bag. I'm not giving up my bag.
I don't know. I mean, bag's got a nice little back area here.
Okay, now we're having a bag discussion.
We're having a bag discussion.
So which one is this? This is what you have.
It's a Timbuktu.
Did you design it online on their little Flash app?
No, I just went to the store because there's a Timbuktu store near me. But this is actually a huge messenger bag because initially I needed my 17-inch MacBook Pro to fit in here. So it's kind of big, but you've got this whole extra area. It's nice and
I like the Timbuktu. I used to have a Timbuktu for a long time. The problem with it is that when your bag is, my bag, my standard weight is a little over 40 pounds. I shouldn't say that because if someone on TSA knows that, then they'll take my bag away and make me check it. But anyway, so I can't put it over one shoulder or hurt my back.
Yeah.
Really, it's heavy. I hurt my back.
And so things are just slipping and sliding.
So this is the, you know, I need to have a backpack. And so this is, but there's the slot. It's a great slot for one. It's just not a great slot for 17 inches.
Well, I think you've made your life very complicated.
No, it's you know, and then see, but then see, I have my little slot down here, and I have all kinds of stuff in here.
So I mean, I'm impressed. In a way, I feel like everything's so tight that the iPad really shouldn't be moving around all that much. You know what you need? You need rubber bands for your smart cover. Problem solved.
Well,
you probably got rubber bands in there already.
I don't think I have any rubber bands in there. I think I have, no, I don't. I don't.
He has like, everything but a rubber band.
So anyway.
But you're welcome.
But what I did do is you can actually, what I was going to say, my little tip. If this ever happens to you, it obviously doesn't happen to very many people because it doesn't happen to Sarah and, you know,
I'm sure there are people watching who say, yeah, it happens to me all the time.
If you wonder why it's going down, you can turn it off in your general settings, your iPad cover lock and unlock.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So it just automatically turns on. And if you're having that problem, which I have. Now, here's the one thing you have to remember is it doesn't turn off either. So when you go like this.
Right.
And you go like that.
You got to remember.
It's still a problem. Yeah. So what you have to do is. I do not have a Blackmagic camera in my bag. Just someone was asking on there. I wish I had one. Anyway, so.
That's a good tip.
It's a good tip.
I've never, I mean, it's possible that this is happening to me and I just don't realize
sometimes,
it.
But I charge
my iPad every night. So.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, see.
I'll go for days.
Habit to get into, if possible.
Every day?
Well, you know what? I use this like sleep tracking software.
Oh, right.
And it docks right into an alarm clock. Yep. So it's like, it's a very easy excuse for me to wake up in the morning and I have 100% battery because I charged overnight.
Right.
But since I've done that, I'd have to try really hard to blow through my battery.
Right.
Even by using it all day, I'd have to be watching movies and doing all sorts of stuff. So
I usually get stopped by the fact that I spend half my time in a hotel room and so I run out of. When I start charging things,
power strip stuff. Power management issue.
It's a power management issue. Anyway, that's it. That's all. Don, do you have you thought of a Mac OS tip?
Yeah, I'll do a quick Safari related one, and that's to do with Flash. Now, if you buy a new Mac, you won't actually have Flash installed by default. And although it's getting fewer and fewer, there are still some websites that have Flash content that you might want to see. Now, you can go ahead and install Flash, but people do tend to have problems with processors racking up when you're accessing Flash content, etc. And sort of the general consensus is if you can get away with not installing Flash, that might be a good idea. So what I do if I've got a machine that hasn't got Flash on, you can get some extensions that will allow you to run YouTube, etc. They will just replace the standard player. But a nice elegant solution is to use Chrome. Chrome browser has got its own built-in Flash implementation, so that if you find a page that has got Flash on and you haven't got Flash installed on your machine, you can quickly open Chrome and go to that page. Now, the tip is how to open Chrome quickly and actually go to the page that you want to display the Flash content on. If you go into Safari and then go into Safari Preferences and then go to the Advanced tab, down at the bottom of the Advanced Preference pane is an option to show the Developer menu in the menu bar. And what happens then is in your Safari menu bar, you get next to bookmarks, you get an extra menu option called Develop. And the very first entry in the Develop drop-down menu is open in Chrome. Or it depends what else you've got installed on your system. But if you're on a page, go to the Develop menu and then select open in Chrome. And the page you're on will actually open in the Chrome browser and you'll be able to see your Flash content.
That's great.
That is a great
Of course,
tip.
I just use the Chrome browser all the time.
Otherwise, yeah. I just use the Chrome browser all the time.
I
like Safari. I like Wayless pulling fine. The tabs off and things, so yeah, I stick with Safari.
No, I have to admit, I got used to, and now I'm so used to doing searches into the main bar in Chrome that I keep on doing that in Safari. And
oh my gosh, like, that kills me. You know, Mountain Lion Safari takes care of that. Mm-hmm. They're going to let you add searches into the regular address bar.
That's good.
Which makes a lot of sense to me. I'm sure there are people who disagree and like the two to be separate. Funny story. Last Sunday, or no, actually last Tuesday, it was April 17th. So, you know, I have 5 hours to go to submit my taxes online because I'm the kind of person who likes to wait till the very last minute. This is in the U.S. Usually it's April 15th, but this year it was April 17th for a variety of reasons. And I'm using TurboTax and I've got to the end and, you know, you get to the point where you've added in your credit card information. I owed some taxes. We're good to go. And then it just says, I'm going to just do a final error sweep just to make sure we're fine. Okay. And there's this kind of strange persistent error and I can't figure it out. And it's like it's an error in one of my boxes where I'm supposed to enter a zero. And I do that and somehow it's calculating. There's a bug in the software, basically, right, on TurboTax's side. And I don't have time to figure it out because I'm about to be late on my taxes. And I get on the phone with customer support at TurboTax. I wait a better part of 2 hours because, of course, everyone else is calling them with their customer support
probably
questions.
Probably the same bug.
Probably. And I get someone on the phone finally and I explain it to him and he's like, okay. And we go through basically just a bunch of sort of trial and error. And finally, long story short, turns out that TurboTax does not work with this particular software issue in Chrome, which is what I'm using. And he says, right, well, just switch over to IE. You'll be fine. And I said, no, that's not going to happen. That's not going
to
happen.
Like, just go back to the 90s. You'll be
fine. But I'm like, how is this? What? Yeah. That's the solution?
Yeah, that's your fix. Good.
TurboTax, the largest tax software company in the nation.
Tells you to go back to IE.
Tells me, oh, you're on Chrome. Why didn't you say so? That won't work. Anyway, you may have used TurboTax to file electronically while using the Chrome browser and say, what are you talking about, Zara? I did this just fine. It was a specific error because of some of my business stuff that I was doing. But anyway, turns out that Safari worked as well. So he didn't know what Safari was. Right. But
yeah, no,
same way that IE did.
See, fortunately, it wasn't a stress for me because April 15th is the day that I file my extension. Actually, it's not even the day that I filed my extension. It's the day that my wife, she had somebody do that. And then I just ask her like a week later, did we actually handle the taxes?
And
then
she goes, says,
yes, we did. Thank you for the help. And then she looks at me sarcastically and then I say, should I get a glass of wine? All right. So anyway, that's how I handle my taxes. So Don, do you have a pick for the, before we get to the picks of the week, we got picks of the week coming. But before that, we're going to go travel back in time.
We got more Mac Break coming up in just a little bit. Mac Break Weekly with Sarah and company. But I want to interrupt here a little bit, give them a break, and talk to you about Carbonite.com, the best way to back up. You know, Steve Gibson was just on, if you didn't hear it, the new Security Now. He's reviewing cloud storage, and he gave an A+ to Carbonite. He said, you know, I really like it. They let you encrypt your file privately. They preserve your privacy. It is cloud storage. He was reviewing it as a cloud storage service. But really what it's all about, Carbonite, is about backing up. You know, you gotta back up if you want to save your data, and you can't do it just whenever you think about it. You can do it to a hard drive next to your computer, but really important, if you ask me, the most important thing is automatic, so you don't have to remember it, continuous, so it backs up every change you make to every file as it happens, back up to the cloud, to the internet, where it's safe. Because, you know, if it's next to the computer, and you might still want to do that. In fact, I do. The problem is, what if there's a fire or a flood? I know we don't want to think about these things, but disasters happen. And don't make it a double disaster by also losing all your data. Backup offsite, continuously, securely, HIPAA-compliant and everything. You do the encryption to Carbonite.com. Here's the deal. You go to Carbonite.com right now. They've got several plans starting at $59 a computer per year. I probably should say that up front because it sounds like $59, good deal. Per year, less than $5 a month for everything on your computer, Mac or PC. They also have programs for multiple disks, multiple computers. It's all there at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code MacBreak when you sign up. You get 2 weeks for free. And then if you decide to buy, you get two extra months for free, 14 months for the price of 12. Carbonite, Carbonite.com. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right with Carbonite, okay?
I think he does pretty well. I know when I've used that, the time traveling, it really takes it out of me.
Yeah.
I mean, I get some serious hangovers, sometimes migraines.
It's melatonin, I think.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
I heard it was orange juice.
When you become
and water.
A pro,
oh, okay.
Yeah, you've
so
got to.
It's all about melatonin.
Yeah, okay. You've got to make sure that you can sleep on a dime.
Yes.
During the wormhole.
Yes. Well, you know, it's hard to sleep during the wormhole.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's violent.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's the bouncing around, and it's mostly the lights. Really, you know, I just can't. I can't do that.
Protective goggles.
Oh.
A must.
I have some at the house. I'll have to try that.
I bet you have some in your backpack, too. You have everything else in there.
I do have
your
a lot
lunch,
of things.
Your lunch, protective goggles.
I actually do have my lunch in my backpack. Anyway, so. All right. Don, do you have a tip for the, or a, yeah, tip for the week?
Right. Let's go with just a simple iPhone application for this week. It obviously will work on the iPad as well, and it's really nice the way iPhone apps work on the new iPad as well. They zoom up really nicely. This one is called Drafts by Agile Tortoise. It's a cheap one. It's 69p or 99 cents. And basically what it does is it allows you to, it's sort of like a jotter. As soon as you open the application, it gives you a blank text entry area that you can just type away. So it's very quick to actually, if you have a thought of some text that you want to capture quickly, just open Drafts, enter the text. And then once the text is entered, you can sort of keep notes that they will sort of stack up behind each other. But what you can do then is you can use Markdown. If you're into Markdown format, you can format them with Markdown. Once you have your text, you can send them off as an email. You can send them to applications. So you can post a tweet directly from the application, or you can send it to your Twitter client. It's just really, it found its way into my doc very, very quickly. Just a one tap to enter into a text entry field, put down your thoughts and either come out of the application and do something with it later or send it on to another application. I think at the last release, they've just put OmniFocus integration in there as well so that, you know, if you've got a task, you can enter the task and then send it to OmniFocus without having to go through and open up the OmniFocus app. It has text expander support as well, which is something I love on an application if it's on the iPhone or iPad. So you can put your text expander abbreviations in there as well. But a really nice, well thought out, nicely featured application. And that's Drafts. It also integrates with a thing called Terminology, which is another application by the same people that enable you to, it's sort of like the dictionary on steroids. You know, you can sort of do much more and the integration's built in. And I think there's some more integration with some other apps as well in there.
Yeah, it looks like they've got fast sending to not only the native Twitter app, but Tweetbot as well, which is the Twitter app of my choice. Terminology is a great app. We've talked about that on iPad today before. So it's nice to see this team has got another hit on their hands because the Terminology is great.
Cool. Very good. So that is Drafts. And Sarah, do you have a
I do. And I hope you guys haven't talked about this in the past. But if you have, I'm just going to remind you why it's a cool app. It's Google Catalogs.
I think we talked about it, but I don't think no one had picked it.
Okay, good. Google Catalogs it's exactly what it sounds like. It's actually Google's way for you to, let's see if you can, let me make sure I get this. I'm doing this backwards. There we go. Something like, you get the idea. Okay, let's go to featured catalogs. I've actually been looking at Crate and Barrel before. So, these are featured catalogs. It works, in both, landscape
Very
and
nice.
Portrait mode, which is already a plus. I mean, it is a native iPad app. And what's nice about this is you go, well, catalogs, isn't that sort of the yesteryear of shopping, but not always. Actually, sometimes I really prefer the catalog view of something, especially when, for example, right now I'm looking to, you know, buy a new chair in my living room, and it's like I don't know what kind of chair I want. I just want to see a setup of someone else's living room, which catalogs, of course, are very good at doing.
Well, and especially now that you're getting it on your iPad instead of having it delivered to your house, the carbon footprint impact
totally
way down because you're not driving to the store and you are still getting all the information.
Exactly. And depending on the catalog. So if we go back to Crate and Barrel, because this one works really well. If you open up, it actually works a little bit better when it looks more like a catalog. If you open up a scene, let's say, you know, I was some rich person and I could make my backyard look like this. And I love this chair, this ottoman. You see a little tag. And once you click the tag, it'll open up in your browser, basically. It's a modified browser version of this exact ottoman, gives you more information. Then I can go ahead and buy on the website straight from here. So again, I think a lot of people say, well, catalogs, I mean, that's the stupid stuff I get in the mail from the previous tenant in my apartment and who is really looking at catalogs right all that often. But I think if you're in the market for something specific and you don't necessarily want to do a lot of online shopping, this is a good way to browse through stuff and get a little bit more motivation. I actually found, and let's go to collages. I'm in the market right now for some new speakers. Gosh, it's all I talk about, and I'm very overwhelmed. It's hard to decide to choose. And there's actually this really cool Crutchfield collage that Google Catalogs has put together that just gives me a bunch of information that experts have written up recently on audio equipment, stereo receivers, bookshelf speakers,
high quality crossovers.
Yeah, you know, like what's this tweeter made of? This kind of thing, and it's actually really helpful. So I love this app. It's completely free, and you know, if you're sort of into window shopping, I guess is a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. It's a must have for the iPad, and you might end up finding something that you end up wanting to buy as well.
Well, I can't wait until the next generation where they start adding like rotatable, you know, be able to rotate stuff, and videos, and I mean, you know that's coming with a lot of the development.
Some apps are kind of already experimenting with that.
We're playing around with it a lot for our training stuff, so the iBooks author stuff. And you just know that catalogs are going to be probably bigger than schools in a lot of ways, because now you can add all this video and you can add all the, you know, the little, you know, rotating stuff.
It's you think of it as like books or ebooks. Well, you know, the books are going away, but it's not the reading that's going away. It's just the medium that's going away. And I think that catalogs really do serve a purpose for inspiration, but I don't need them to be mailed to my house. I don't want to pick them up at the cash register anymore, but I like to have the visual stimuli of the catalogs.
I saw a lot of people at NAB last week saying, no, I don't want any paper. People are trying to hand them
that's
something.
Me.
Like, no, I really. And I've noticed that I used to come back with this huge bag that would then sit in my.
It's a mess.
Because I brought this huge bag back that was all the information of things I have to look at. And then it sat in the corner of my office until the next NAB. And I realized, hey, I haven't looked at this for a year. And then I throw it away and then I do it again. And now that's all going away with stuff like this. So anyway, my pick of the week is. I've tested. I just want everyone to know that I've gone through. The trials and tribulations of testing just about every stylus for an iPad. Have you done any tests for that for iPad today?
Leo has.
I think I have them all now.
He has his favorite. Although I know that The Verge at TheVerge.com recently did a big stylus roundup. And I think that the one that they like the most is the same one that you like the most. But I will let you tell people about it.
So I finally, you know, after testing them all, there was one that I hadn't tested. And when I was at NAB, they had it sitting there, and I had to give it a shot, and it is definitely the best. And then I bought one, and then now one of my producers has it actually, but it didn't stay with me very long. But it is a bamboo stylus from Wacom. Wacom is, of course they've been making these tablets forever. They think about these things a lot.
It's standard for artists in Photoshop and using it regularly.
I've been using their tablets forever. I mean, I have the bamboo tablet and I have an Intuos and I have a Cintiq and I have a bunch of other things. And it's a great interface to kind of go in and out of it. And I just hadn't gotten around to this one. I literally have, I think every other one, like every other one now I see and I go, oh yeah, I already have that one. And this one is by far, in my opinion, the weight, the interactivity with the iPad. I don't know what they're doing differently. I don't know what magic sauce they put on the tip, but it just feels great. And especially when you're using their bamboo paper that they have, or bamboo notebook application, paper, which is my other favorite little drawing app. It's very, very fluid. And so anyway, my suggestion is. My tip is the bamboo stylus if you're looking for that perfect, you know, interface, you know, to your iPad.
Well, there was the app recently called Paper.
Yeah, that's my other one that I.
Yes,
I love it.
So and it's certainly not the first app that makes use of
freehand
type of a thing.
So Wacom makes their own tablet that does that. But there's certain ones that really figure it out. Sketchbook is free on the iPad.
There are many
free version, and so. You can do it with your finger, but it really makes a difference when you start to, when you start to use the stylus.
I think even for people who say, well, you know, I really don't do a lot of sketching or, you know, doodling or that sort of thing. Imagine if you had a stylus, even if you didn't use it on a regular basis. The other day I had to sign a PDF document.
Yep.
And the iPad is like way easier to do that with than even anything in OS X, in my opinion. And that would have been nice. Because my signature is sort of fat finger type of a version. Exactly. So it does come in handy for all sorts of stuff.
And having a good stylus is really where it moves to, you really stop using paper. Mm-hmm. Like you just open up the notebook or you open up whatever you're going to do and start writing notes and starting making lists and that type of thing. So I think that it's pretty nifty. Bamboo stylus, Wacom. And I think we're running to the end of the show. Don, where can people find you? Mm-hmm.
Right, well, you can find me over at screencastonline.com. That's where I do my weekly iOS and Mac video tutorials. You can find my apps on the App Store. Just search for SEO Tutor. I've got four of them on there now. And also on my blog over at themaxscreencastguy.com.
And Sarah, I think we all know where we can find you. Over there.
Actually, you're going to find me on TwitPhoto immediately following this show. No, I am on Tech News Today, Monday through Friday. iPad Today on Thursdays. And this week, I was lucky enough to be able to have a seat here on MacBreak Weekly because
Leo
Laporte is out of town. It's nice to be here. I love MacBreak Weekly. I'm usually just a listener, but I love the content that you guys talk about. So it's fun. It's fun to join you guys every so often. That's so funny. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. And thanks, Don.
Thank you. No, it's been great. And I apologize. I missed last time. I was at a conference and I was all lined up to come onto the show and the bandwidth
sure.
let me down.
Fine.
So at last, I managed to get you. I invited me back. So thank you.
No, of course, we're going to invite you back. Great. so thanks so much. And until next week, get back to work. Break time is over.